Okay, let's do some quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. That's obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. To reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. Here's the thing. Information is power. Information is money. Literally, the currency of today's world of entrepreneurship is information. And if you could bring all of the information about your business into one dashboard, this is incredibly valuable. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of the truth about your business. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, access from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all of your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. This is so valuable. You just hit a button and you can see all the information about your business instead of having to like call five different departments and get all these emails and put it all together and make sense of it. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math, see how you'll profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/James. netsuite.com/James. netsuite.com/James.
Today's episode of Ask Altucher is being brought to you by us, the Choose Yourself Network. By now, you've probably heard James say that choosing yourself is about making sure you have multiple streams of income. Well, if you're retired or just looking for side income, we've put together a free business plan for you. You can download it right now at jamesaltucher.com/income. It's a great idea, perfect for anyone looking to build multiple streams of income. You probably walk around every day and see plenty of opportunities, but who has the time to chase them all? Instead, James has started keeping track of his best ideas, those that anyone can do. One of them is so unique, he wanted to share it with you. So just go to jamesaltucher.com/income and download his free report today. And now, here's today's episode of Ask Altucher. Hope you enjoy.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show on the Stansberry Radio Network.
Yeah, that was my first question. Whose podcast are we doing? Are we doing yours or are we doing... Are we going to share this? We can share the audio file and both use it, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess so,
but,
yeah.
What would be the biggest, best use? Your name to take the
I don't know.
Course. Yes,
we
of
could
course.
Talk about it.
Of course.
We'll see how it goes.
1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. Looking fabulous. This is great.
It's Instagramming and selfie. We already started, by the way.
Oh. Yeah, of course. We have to. That's how
yeah.
it works.
I want to Instagram.
All right.
He's going to go get his phone. So I just want to start then. I'll just tell Julie... how amazed I am. I've been trying your meditation ever since you came on the yoga podcast, and it has been like a trip for me. It's been amazing what has happened, like including inhibitions that have been lifting off of me, and I'm really grateful for that.
This is incredible. So, like, tell us, what are some of the inhibitions that have lifted, and what are you doing now? What's happening? What does your morning look like?
It's crazy. Like, I have to, like, leave the house early even.
It seems I have lost all shame, and I'm ready to start rapping.
That's so great. See, I knew.
Things get interesting.
See, the artists exist inside each one of us. No, I'm psyched to hear that.
That's true. That's very true. Like, there is a creative person inside all of us, and all it takes is that little encouragement or that little, you know, him looking at me and saying, of course you can. And I'm like, wow, yes, I can.
Yeah, literally, she wrote this morning 10 reasons why she should be CEO of Twitter.
I know, I was going to get into that. I was going to say, like, how is the campaign going? And how is the meditation playing into this? this campaign. You laid out a very compelling argument, I would say.
And it's just because I told her, yeah, you would be qualified to be CEO of Twitter. So then she just wrote this post.
Like, so, I looked
there
at
some
him.
Really good ideas.
Right? Thank you. Yeah. I looked at him and I'm like, are you saying I could be qualified to be CEO of Twitter? And he looked at me in the face and said, yes. Mm-hmm. And this, you know, my father told me I should learn how to type. So I always thought there was a ceiling. But when he said that, I was like, well, maybe I can. And my 10 ideas were solid. I hope Twitter flies me to San Francisco.
Yeah.
Well, Dick Costolo is a stand-up comedian, right?
Yeah.
Right. For like a while, like right. Not as a hobby. Like that was like his thing.
Well, there, he tells a joke. He was at a reunion of Second City, which is kind of the renowned improv place in Chicago where all the stand-up comedians learn their trade. And so he was at a reunion, and Steve Carroll comes up to him, and they're talking, and Dick is already the CEO of Twitter, and Steve says, you know, too bad it didn't really work out for you. Yeah. So. But
Now he'll go back to Second City.
Yeah, exactly.
He's going to end up like on the cast of Saturday Night Live after being CEO.
He's going to land on his feet.
But I think, you know, getting back to the meditation as the, you know, support and the portal to you discovering this superpower that you have inside of yourself. I think we all have superpowers. And really, I often feel it's like there's this thing called divine mind. And it's sort of like this field of every potential, you know, every outcome, every possible event. And tapping into meditation is being able to merge with that force. And so it's almost like you can fall into the gap of meditation and stillness, and somehow you become one with this stream of divine intelligence. And you really can do anything and be anything and experience anything. And I think it's even way beyond what we know here in the 3D physical realm. I think it keeps getting more and more fun.
Yes.
What I'm trying to tell you.
Absolutely.
So
yeah.
Go for the rapping. And then after that, it could be wild.
Well, we definitely always do whatever is kind of in front of us that seems like it will help us. I don't know, either learn more or help others or, you know, whatever. So, for instance, you guys coming into town. And by the way, we haven't introduced any of us.
Yeah,
but,
no.
You know,
we do that later.
It doesn't matter.
Rich Roll and Julie Roll, Claudia.
It's Julie Pyatt.
It's Julie Pyatt. And I am Claudia Azula.
Claudia Azula, sure. James Altucher. We're all hanging out. Doing a podcast together. So this
is literally at your dining room table.
Right.
Yeah. And Rich just displayed an amazing capability show of putting together podcast equipment on the go.
This is literally like podcasters on a dining room table drinking tea.
Yeah.
That's right. Like Seinfeld's.
There's no agenda. We actually had a whole unrecorded podcast that transpired before we turned the
on the elevator.
On, so, yeah.
The elevator podcast.
But anyway, it's a pleasure to be with you guys. It's been fun watching your journey together and separately and watching you guys grow. And James, I said this to you, you know, last time we spoke on Skype, but, you know, I've been a big fan of your writing for quite some time. And so it's really fun to meet you guys in person.
And vice versa. I mean, I was on your podcast, I think, about a year or so ago. And now you've been on mine. You guys have been on podcasts.
We do meet.
Yeah. And so now this is the first time we're meeting.
Right. Well, I don't know if you remember, I came here on the cusp of snowpocalypse, and we had arranged you were going to come into the city to do the podcast in person, and then we got hit with a huge blizzard, and that didn't happen. So we ended up doing it by Skype. But
we get those in New York, and they're horrible. You guys are so lucky to live in California.
Well, now we have a little water problem, but
that's true.
What's the problem with the water?
Lack of water.
Lack
thereof.
Doesn't California?
It has something
to do
with the reason that we're plant-based advocates.
But California is in a desert. So it's always going to have...
It always does. But it's particularly kind of acute at the moment. So it'll be interesting to see how it pans out. Like even all the snowpack is melted. Like it's rather dire.
Yeah.
So now how did you guys meet? Because it seems like, and we discussed this a little bit, Rich, but it seems like when you first met, you were probably 100% different. And now you're only like 50% different.
Yeah. He's definitely still 100% different.
No. Are you going to answer that, or why are you on your phone?
You go ahead.
Okay.
I'm busy.
Yeah, I think I mentioned. I think I said to you. Yeah, she's like on her phone. What are you doing? Put that away.
Turn it off. So
I mean, we're very different in certain respects, But we met in a yoga class. So at least I was sort of inclined to, you know, sort of look into maybe a better path than I was living. And that doesn't mean that I was adequately practicing that in every aspect of my life. But yeah, I had, I mean, I had gotten out of rehab and I was sort of trying to develop, you know, a more kind of spiritually based way of living, and I was dipping my toe into yoga. So what do? I go to the yoga studio that has like the most attractive women in all of town.
Very good, like, very important strategy for all men.
And there's only like three guys in the class, right? So
men don't know this.
No, they don't. It's the best place if you want to meet women.
Like, men go to a bar where there's no women, right? And no women you want to meet. And yet in a yoga class, or if you go to like a tango class or something like that, or a cooking class, you're going to meet, it's going to be like a 90-to-1 ratio of women to men.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of interesting, but you know, the other thing that's kind of interesting about that is that when you're a very devoted yoga practitioner and you're in your room and you've found your tribe, you're extremely protective about that. And
that's
so in
true.
My experience, Rich and I were only one of two couples that set up in this entire community over a very long period of time. That's not to say there weren't sexual relations going on, you know, randomly.
There was a lot of that.
But
there always is.
But I would say that, you know, if it started to get serious, it was like, whoa, like, I don't want to invite her into my room or him into my room because this is my yoga. Like, you know, if it goes bad, then it's less of good.
But no, were you the teacher, Julie?
No, she wasn't the teacher. Oh. She was in the class. Oh. And I'd gotten out of rehab and I made this commitment to be celibate for my first year of sobriety. And I actually practiced that. And it was a very empowering, illuminating experience that actually it was amazing, you know, to put it bluntly.
You were like a monk.
Yeah, it was a very kind of powerful, you know, period of self-reflection. But anyway, I started going to this yoga class, and like Julie said, it's sort of like, well, I don't want to – like, I really enjoyed going to it. And I figured if I like dated someone once that year was up and it didn't go well, then there'd be that weird awkwardness of like going back to that class. And so I, you know, I had my eye on Julie, but like it was – you know, we'd met – we kind of knew each other for quite a while before that actually transpired. But it was a pretty interesting time and a very interesting yoga class. Like, Russell Simmons would come to this class. Like, there were some pretty interesting people who dropped in. And the other couple that ended up getting married that basically connected the same weekend that we originally hooked up were – that was Bobby Shriver and his now wife, Melissa.
Yeah.
So it was like some pretty amazing people.
Bobby Shriver, like, related to other Shriver?
Right, yes, exactly. Yes. Yeah.
I have two questions for you on these. First of all, the only other person I ever heard of that went a year – celibate became a very angry man, and I wonder if you had a lot of anger issues during that year, because that sounds is like a lot of men think that could be a good thing, but I saw it going in the wrong direction, and it wasn't pretty.
Well, I think that's revelatory in its own right. Like, I didn't find it to be I didn't experience anger in that. Like, what I learned was that a lot of my addiction issues were tied up in how I related to women. And I had to kind of unravel that knot and learn something about how I communicate and how I feel about myself and how I interact with the opposite sex. And that gets tied up with self-esteem and all that sort of stuff. So I really needed to focus on that and work through a lot of those issues so that I could get to a place where I could have a healthy, sober relationship with somebody who, you know, is with a woman, you know, and without going through that process for myself, I don't know that I would have gotten to the place to be a person that someone like Julie would have been interested in. So for me, it was like, you know, it was a huge part of my personal growth.
So
and
did you
I said, I, the second question, I said, go, I had to, my second
it.
Question was, who spoke to who first?
I don't know. Here, you talk.
Well, let's see. A friend of mine told me that Rich, you know, was interested in me. And at the time, I thought that he might be.
That sounds very high schoolish, by the way.
It was
right?
Very. Yoga.
Were you talking to her friend? Like,
yoga,
don't tell her.
Right. It actually was. This was very high schoolish in the yoga room during those days. But I thought Rich was probably gay because he hung out with a certain guy in the class who seemed very gay. And also Rich was also very, he was lifting weights more at the time. So he was kind of a little bit more, he can bulk up like really quickly. And so I don't know. So I just, I thought he wasn't he wasn't in my field. I didn't think that was happening. But there later I found out there was a joke Rich told a couple friends that he, when he saw me, you should tell the story.
Well, Julie was like this wild animal. Like she, you know, like she was this exotic wild animal. And at the time,
yeah, like a lot of like hair on your arm.
Well, she had, no, like she had like orange and blue like streaks in her hair. And like I'd never experienced like a creature of this sort before. So I was fascinated and intrigued. And I was like, I just knew, you know, you hear about like, you know, it's so cliche to, oh, love at first sight or something like that. But like I knew when I saw her, I was like, just like, completely fixated on her. And there was something inside of me that I said to my friend, I was like, that is my next girlfriend. Like, I just knew it, you know? And it's interesting because like I had gotten out of a marriage disaster and I was like right out of rehab. Like I was not a vision for you. You know what I mean? Like I had a lot of problems and a lot of stuff to like work through and rebuild in my life. And I always thought, well, my next girlfriend is going to be like 24, like no, you know, like no baggage, like really just simple. And here, you know, I'm like walking this path towards this woman where, you know, she's in the process of getting divorced. She has two sons and she's, you know, a couple of years older than me. And there's a lot of, you know, sort of complicated things that are revolving around in her life. And it's sort of, you know, it's that adage that, you know, you don't choose the person that you love. It's like, it occurs. And so, you know, but it was kind of interesting and precarious. Like it wasn't like what I thought was going to happen.
Mm-mm, it was exactly the opposite. And I was getting out of a 10-year marriage. And so, you know, I had plans to just date and be really wild and just do whatever I wanted to do and be free. And he was looking for, like he said, a much younger girl. But the one common thing is neither one of us were looking for like marriage. Mm. And it actually was divinely worked out because I was extremely protective of my sons. And so I would not let him meet them for about 9 months.
Wow.
So on the weeks that I had them, I just didn't see him because I was not going to just bring, you know, a bunch of people, you know, into the boy's life and out and all that. And that was also fine by him. And I think it gave him the space and the safety for it not to be like, oh, there's two little kids, you know, and you know, they weren't his. So
how old were they?
They were 3 and 4.
Wow.
3 and 4. And so, yeah, it was this process. And I have to say I'm extremely surprised. I am – when I first really talked to Rich, it was at this retreat. Actually, it was on a yoga retreat. Then we had gone on retreat. And so I sat down and talked to him kind of at the retreat. And in the first conversation I had with him, I was like, oh, shit, this guy's like – he's a marrying guy. Like, he's not like a dating guy.
Oh.
And I knew.
How could you tell he was a marrying guy?
It was like a memory or a resonance or something. Like, I'm sure we know each other from past life. And I mean, there's no way that we would, that, you know, he saw me and picked me out of the room and was like, that's going to be my next wife.
Like you recognized
it. Yeah. It's a recognition underneath. It's like, I talked to him and I was like, ugh, like, cause I just wanted to date. And it was like, this was the exact opposite of that. So, yeah. So,
he turned you around.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's been amazing. I mean, I think in the early days there was a lot of, you know, kind of acclimating that we were getting used to each other and sort of figuring all of that out. And I would say that, you know, his path in sobriety and what he learned from being sober has been, you know, a beautiful, part of him because there was always a ground for, you know, conflict resolution and, you know, discussion and getting to the other side in a very intimate way. Like, so, you know, being really honest, but being willing to own your side of the street and actually go through to the other side. And so we made it through some of these obstacles, you know, that are, I think, characteristic of a new relationship. And I have to say, I mean, what Rich and I have experienced it as a couple after then having our own two kids and also going through just the life transformation that we went through, I never imagined this level of intimacy was possible.
Wow.
So it was not obvious to either one of us, but it has turned into, you know, a really amazing union.
But I kind of think too, you guys are similar to us in the sense that many of the things that you do professionally, you do together, right? So, I mean, you just have this book, Plant Power, out together.
Which we love and we're eating
from.
Yeah,
now she's, every recipe is like out of your out of Plant Power.
We're eating plant-based.
I'm not allowed in the kitchen, so every recipe she makes. But so it's similar to us. Like, we spend like 18 hours a day together or however many. So just because we're always working together on things.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty interesting. Like, there's a lot of overlap, I think, in your relationship and ours. And I'm interested in hearing how you guys make that work. I mean, you guys really are integrated in what you're doing. I mean, you kind of have your own little fiefdoms, but if you drew the Venn diagram, there's quite an overlap. And I would say it's similar in what we do. I mean, we kind of have our own separate things. But, you know, we're united in, and we're very like in sync in terms of like what our collective mission is together. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean that, I mean, we don't spend 18 hours a day.
No, we definitely do not spend 18 hours a day, and we would not survive 18 hours a day. So we're very different in that way. But yeah, I would say with us, the global mission is we're exact. And then we have very different ways of operating within that. And we're a great team. Like, you know, I mean, I think the first time that we found out, we made a film together. We wrote a feature script and we made a movie and a 20-minute movie. And we worked on that together.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was really fun, really amazing. And Rich directed, and he's a brilliant director. He was really great. So anyway, we knew then that we were a good team. And then, you know, because when you're working on a movie, it's
I think it functions because there's a yin and a yang. You know, like Julie has a skill set that I don't have, and vice versa. So I mean, how does that work with you guys? And how did you dip your toe into the idea that you would be working together? And what have been kind of the pitfalls? And how have you navigated that?
Mm. Yeah. Well, you know, I fell in love with James pretty much instantaneously. We met on J-Date. I'm not Jewish, so I'm sorry.
How did you get on J-Date?
Is that a violation of the terms and service?
I think it's illegal.
It kind of is now. Like, they really don't encourage
Claudia just
it.
Didn't understand. She didn't read that part.
No, I'll tell you exactly why I went on J-Date. I went on J-Date unmatched because I wanted a boyfriend that would pay his half of the rent. Like, I was tired of paying the rent every time for every boyfriend. And so I thought maybe a Jewish boy will be, a Jewish mind will be able to.
Sort of like reverse anti-Semitism, you know. Oh, Jews are going to pay rent.
I've also lived in New York for like 20 years now. So, you know, you end up.
You're like honorary Jewish.
I had a collage. I wanted a Jewish guy with glasses. And there
no, he, literally, she had like, I, the first time I went over her house, she had like a vision board. And there was a guy with like black curly hair and glasses, like. taped to this vision board.
And so
I'm like determined at some point to like track down this guy and say, you're actually the one on the vision board, Claudia.
This is who she sees when she looks at me.
Exactly.
But of course, he was married and he had two children. And
no, not when, I mean, I had two children, but I wasn't married.
You were in the process of divorce.
Right. Yeah, I was separated.
You were separated. And so he had two children, which I didn't see for a year. Look at the similarities,
wow,
too.
Interesting.
Amazing. Because we wanted to make the transition easy for the children, which I totally got.
Isn't that nice? That's so cool to hear.
It's important because it's traumatic for the kids, you know, to.
It is very traumatic. For the kids, like you read in all these books that kids perpetually, no matter what, even if it was like, even if they recognize that their parents were unhappy together, kids have in the back of their mind this vision that always that their parents are going to get back together. Even though my kids love Claudia, and I'm sure it's the same thing here, you know, I'm sure in the back of their heads there's always this thought. So you have to be very careful how you kind of make that introduction.
So James introduced me to the kids as a babysitter one day when he was going on TV, and I played with them for an hour and so on. And then later on, actually, when James told them I'm getting married, this is a year into, and we were about to get married, the little one said, oh, no. And so James said...
Yeah, she started crying. Like, I had to pull over. We were driving to meet Claudia for the first time, or they didn't know it was going to be for the second time, but it was really... They thought it was the first time. And my little one started to cry, so I pulled over and said, look, let's just talk about it a little bit. And she was very worried, actually.
Of two things.
Yeah.
One thing.
One thing, really. She was very worried, and this is like a Disney propaganda thing, but she was very worried that her new potential stepmother was going to have black hair.
It's going to be evil and wicked, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, that's so amazing.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And so when I said, no, she actually has, you know, brownish, reddish hair like you.
And then he said, I think you're going to like her because you already met her. And they're like, oh, is that the one with the Spanish accent? And he goes, yeah. And he says, she said, oh, I can live. She didn't say, I can live with that. She said, I can leave. She literally thought I could have killed her.
Oh, my goodness.
It's amazing how Disney has propagated this idea of the evil stepmother is so embedded in, you know, our culture. Like,
right.
Stepmom's Thank getting you. Bad rap.
So I say...
Well, we could do a whole podcast on, like, how Disney is, you know, don't get me started.
In some places, Star Wars is pretty cool, you know, but...
Star Wars is going to be great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's changing, but it's true. It's like this is a really important issue. And this goes back to, you know, Claudia was speaking to me on her podcast about the imbalance in spiritual teachers, predominantly men. I'm sure there are some women teachers that are imbalanced. I have not met any in my entire life.
Neither have I.
You haven't either. However, always imbalance in men, but we have to start to look as, you know, as a collective on how we're objectifying women and how early it starts off, that it's implanted in the children at such a little age that any woman, any peripheral woman in the community is evil and going to kill you or poison you. Like, it's like, what, who came up with those to begin with? And the other thing is that as a woman, you need someone to rescue you. Like, mm-hmm. like that is the whole paradigm. And it's set up at a very, very, very young age.
Yes.
And this is violent against women, as a matter of fact. And we all play into it because we've all been raised in this humanity paradigm. So, you know, we've all, as women, we've been the seductress and we've played the sort of helpless, you know, yeah,
distress.
I need some help. And as the male, you know, you guys have been taught, oh, well, you know, I have to be the protector. I have to sweep in and make it all better. And when we look at this spiritually, the energy, the same thing, it's like a victimizer, you know, program. So a rescuer is the same energy as a rapist, if you really look at it. And I know that sounds really drastic, but you know, every being is an emanation of God and comes in with the divine blueprint with enough energy to sustain itself and even fulfill itself. So the very idea that something would be lacking and you would have to, you know, get that from another source, it's not divine. It's not in divine alignment.
But, I mean, you would have to say that there are occasions when rescue is necessary. You know, it's like, it's not like... I mean, what do you have to qualify that a little bit, I think.
I'm just
there
saying
there are scenarios
that, well,
where somebody needs to be rescued and rescuing them is appropriate.
But do men need to be rescued?
I'm not saying categorically, but if, like, you know,
every
if
day
you
I
drive
probably
your,
need
you,
to be
no,
rescued.
I know, but yeah. I mean, I'm talking about. I'm not saying that as human beings we don't need each other and we don't interact with each other. But what I'm saying is that as divine beings, we are fully sovereign in our own right. Each being comes in with enough energy to fulfill itself, and this paradigm that's being implanted in humanity at such an early age, it's not in balance.
And I think we're changing it. I think there are many people who are like you guys, you know, that show that there is the possibility of a happy, balanced relationship between men and women. One thing we get in Ask Altucher, people tell us, they tell me, I don't know what a healthy relationship sounds like. And so I had no idea that's what we were doing. But we turn out to be a healthy relationship. And so it's good that, you know, to have examples of, yes, it can work out, even if there's the stepmother. And yes, even if the stepfather comes in and two other children come into the mix, it can work out as long as we own that divine energy and we access it.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's an interesting thing, though, like, you know, you mentioned it's the same energy, the rescuer and the rapist. And I agree, like, theoretically, but at the same time, because we are all grown up in this mythology, it's hard to pull away from that. Like, if the man is not the rescuer, there might just be, like, built in less attraction from the woman. Not in every case, but in some cases, because we just grow up that way from the age of, like, four on.
Absolutely. I mean, I agree with you. And that's what I'm saying. It exists in both women and men. It's not like, oh, the men have to stop doing it. It's like we've been implanted with this imbalance and we believe this illusion, like, within ourselves. But one of the key things with Rich being that he was working a program, one of the main things that was really powerful about him in this state coming through his addiction and having gone through all of that spiritual work, he was not rescuing me. He would say, I don't know.
I don't know the answer to that. And I can see that you're suffering, but I can't help you with that. But I'll stand here next to you, but I can't fix it for you.
I love that. I love that because it's so necessary. There are so many words in 12-step programs. And I'm not like advocating for them. I'm just saying I've been through them. And they teach you so many little things that have been passed through centuries. Like, you know, I don't know everything. Mm-hmm. And for when James just listens to me and doesn't try to solve my problem, just lets me express that I am angry or whatever, is so helpful because I don't need a solution sometimes. Sometimes I just need to say, look, this sucks.
Right. I mean, a couple observations with that. I mean, first of all, it's the great myth that every guy carries around that, you know, when the woman has the problem, the guy just inherently wants to fix it. When in truth, it's usually like what you just said, where you just want to be heard and you want somebody to say, I'm here and I hear you and I support you. Not necessarily to solve the problem for
you. See, that's the most romantic thing a guy can say to a woman.
But it makes a guy feel helpless because our masculinity is tied up in this idea of problem solving, you know, and it's an identity thing.
But it's also –
hold on a second. So, you know, the idea of saying I don't know conjures up this sense of vulnerability, right? Like – and it's scary, especially for men, to be vulnerable, right? But when you kind of get comfortable with that, there's great power in that. And I think that is, you know, one of the main reasons why James's writing is so powerful, because you're not afraid to be vulnerable and you're very transparent about your mishaps and your foibles, and you have such a, you know, a brilliant touch with your writing to make it comedic and to make it emotionally accessible for people that they can tap in and they can say, I relate to that because I see myself in that.
Well,
but getting to that place, right? Like, how did you arrive at that place where you got comfortable with being that person?
Well, I think a lot of it had to do with, you know, just in terms of the writing, everybody has, you know, as you were saying yesterday in your talk, everybody has their hardship story. You know, we all have been through everything. And we've all been through things that we're so ashamed about, we'll never reveal. And at the same time, there is some level that will reveal that people are going to be like shocked. Oh my gosh, I can't believe he or she is saying that. But that reminds me of the 10 times I've been through that exact thing that I would never tell anybody. Mm-hmm. So I write some of these articles and people will, you know, good friends of mine will start tweeting or whatever, too much information. And then privately they'll email to me and say, oh yeah, that happened to me and this yeah. happened to me and don't tell anybody, don't tell it on a podcast. And so, but yeah, I think a lot of people, you know, I think men and to some extent everybody, but everybody needs to be like this perfect success. And I think being comfortable with where you are right now on the path, on the journey to wherever you're going to be, which could mean saying, I don't know, is part of that path. Mm-hmm. So you have to not know to start the path, because we come out of like the age of 21, like we just got our head filled with all sorts of bullshit for like 18 years, and then we're supposed to have this purpose in life. You know, I just got an email today. I'm 18. It was from someone in India, so he was very polite. I'm 18, sir, and I'm very depressed because I don't know what my special purpose is in life. And I'm like, you're 18. Just write me again in 10 years, and I'll remember this email. Don't worry, and we'll talk about it. So,
yeah. You send him my meditation. Get him on that.
But I mean, yeah. The idea that we're supposed to know, you know, what we're supposed to do with our lives by that age, you know,
or by any age. Like where I'm 47, I have no idea what I'm doing at age 48. So exactly. I'm going to be an ultra marathon runner.
No, but you were saying earlier about this is something that I think is very, very powerful, and that's doing what's right in front of you. Right. That's a very present, conscious way of being, you know, and so, you know, any act, any activity, anything can be a spiritual practice. And what better way to bring you to the now moment than to do what is right in front of you? So I've had this experience when we've gone through different kinds of hardships, or, you know, the road has been maybe a little bit more rocky. And when you really start, look, you go, okay, well, what do I have right in front of me? And when you really stop and you look,
you'll be shocked at how many resources you have right in front of you or things
to do. That's a great point. Like, look at what's right in front of you and then take, like, one action, you know, because then you're doing an action. You're not just in your mind thinking, oh, my God, bad things are happening. You've analyzed what's in front of you, and you're taking one action doing something with what's in front of you. Now, stillness and silence and meditation is good, too, but often we're so much in our head, there needs to be an expression of that to move forward problems or whatever.
Yeah, and one thing I wanted to say to Rich's point about men, we are wired to think that we need to find a solution. However, and I can't speak for every woman, but when a man becomes vulnerable, there's nothing sexier. It's like the sky breaks and thunders and like, oh my God, who is this guy? So for any guy listening.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. It's like he said, I don't know.
But it's paradoxical because you want men to be strong too, right?
You want it both ways.
And that's very confusing.
Soft is strong.
Being vulnerable is very strong. That's like, what's braver than being vulnerable in front of a woman?
Well, look at your relationship. So you were 40 and on the staircase with, you know, the potential heart attack. And you had to be the rescuer in some sense with the diet and change of lifestyle. And, of course, he had to make the decision. But I think you were very much a rescuer.
No. So I have to share with you guys the inside scoop to this story.
We promise we won't tell
anybody. Don't tell anyone, okay? It's just between us here on this table. No, we'll see. Okay, so I had kind of been caught in that paradigm. I had been, Rich was eating junk food. He was dense. He was struggling. You know, he was not drinking, but his alcoholism was, you know, gripping him at different times, you know, the energy of it. And he was having a hard time, you know, struggling. And I had healed myself of a golf ball sized cyst in my neck through the use of Ayurvedic herbs and a plant-based diet. So I had demonstrated my ability to connect with food in a very healing way. And I kept sort of reaching my hand out to him like, honey, here, just take my hand and, you know, I'm going to help you. And the more I reached for him, the more paralyzed he became. And I couldn't figure it out. And
yeah, why do you think that was?
Well, because who wants to be told what to do, right? You know, like I didn't, you know, it's sort of like she's coming at me, do this, do that. You know, all I hear is like, you know, I'm doing it wrong. And like, so I think it brings up a lot of, you know, baggage about, you know, how I grew up and parental stuff and all of that. So it immediately throws a wall up and I like resist. So it was my natural inclination to like shut the door. Like when somebody's trying to tell me I have to change these habits, like, you know, at the time I'm thinking, look, I already gave up drugs and alcohol. Like, just leave me alone. Like, what do you want from me? You know what I mean? Like, let me enjoy at least this aspect of my life.
Pizza and chips.
Yeah, so. Let me enjoy my junk.
Potato chips are vegetarian.
Yeah. So, and the thing on my end, so I had, you know, many, many, many friends that were all telling me just how right I was because I was clearly living the cleaner life, right? I clearly had a better grip on things, right? So I tried many things over really almost a 7-year period. I begged him. I reasoned with him. I threatened him.
Did you ever get, though, disgusted to the point where I can't do this anymore? He's never going to listen to me. I'd rather be with a guy who's going to at least have this lifestyle that I have.
Well, I would say that, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say disgusted, that I wouldn't use that word, but I would say that, yeah, I came to a point in the road where I was like, okay, I need to look at this relationship and am I going to stay with this man? Like, it came to that. And we broke up for like a 24-hour period. Like, he left and, you know, went away and then came back with a really awesome mixtape.
High school.
So good. So, getting back, I was clear. I mean, listen, Rich is my third marriage. So I was married twice before. So you could call me a relationship expert. I am speaking people. And my first relationship, I was actually a battered woman. So that's a whole nother thing. My second relationship was a fairy tale marriage, exactly what I'm talking about, but produced two beautiful children, my older boys, and it was a big love affair of my life for 10 years. Then I met Rich after that. So now Rich and I have been together 15 years. So I've got some
rubber, you know, some road behind me. And I'm looking at all this and I'm clear that I'm not leaving Rich, that we are not breaking up, or at least that's not what I want. And I'm hoping that, you know, that he doesn't want that either. So, I've had the blessing of working with an Indian master. I'm a spiritual seeker. I've had, you know, very many different kinds of teachers hosted at our house. And, you know, I've gone to countless retreats and sweat lodges and meditations and journeys and all kinds of stuff. And this one particular Indian master, he proposed to me the idea of divine love. So he said, divine love is simply like the sun. It loves you simply for your essence, how you are right now sitting there. Before any achievements earned or any, before you've done anything, just the very fact you exist at all, it loves you unconditionally. So, and then he was talking about human love and how human love is a business arrangement. So you meet somebody, you project the image, the guy on the vision board onto you. And then later, after you discover that, you know, that who you're married to is not the illusion of your image that you projected onto that person anyway, then you get angry and disillusioned with them. And so for some reason, I guess I had beaten my head against the wall so long for a good 7 years. It took me a while. Did not get this that soon. And it was tricky because I thought my reasoning was so altruistic. You know, it was so for such a good reason. And then I realized that he was a divine being of God, just as I was. And I needed to release him to his life. I needed to stop to need him to self-realize this lifetime or experience life the way I was going to experience it. So I released him, and I really did release him in unconditional love and compassion. And it was when I let him go that his transformation began.
Wow.
Yeah, so I think what happened in that is that, you know, I could feel it was almost like a vacuum of energy. Like there was a shift where it was very palpable. I'm like, oh, I don't feel like, you know, there's nothing coming at me anymore. And so what that does is it flips the mirror, right? So suddenly I'm like, oh, wait, this is on me. You mean like I have to make a decision about how I want to live my life, you know? And that decision is not going to be based upon somebody else's approval or seeking that approval or gaining that approval, right? And so I think that was something that was like new to me. And I was like, oh, wait, like I have to take my own inventory here. And that was the beginning of like planting the seed of like, you know, what do I want and how do I want to live? And is this, you know, the path that I want to take, and taking responsibility for that for the first time, I think. And that kind of coincided. You know, that was happening shortly before the staircase thing. So it's like, had Julie not sort of consciously made that decision at that time, I don't know that the whole staircase kind of narrative would have transpired, you know, in the way that it did.
So, and just to be clear what that narrative was for anybody who doesn't know your story, you practically like, you were walking up a staircase and you were so out of breath and your chest was pounding and you were overweight and you were having lots of problems. You couldn't make it up the staircase.
Right.
And then from there you decided you had to make a change in your life. And is at that point did you say, okay, I need to start having this plant? I know you didn't start running then. You started the plant lifestyle
and a detox first.
Yeah, I mean, it was certainly not an overnight thing, and the narrative kind of sort of compacts it to make it seem like it all happened overnight, and it definitely was not that. But yeah, I had this moment where I was like, okay, I need to change, and I didn't know how to or what the first step was going to be, and Julie was my resource. So, you know, that's when for the first time I did turn to her and I said, you know, will you help me? Like I'm ready now to like make some of these changes. And ironically, she was like, she kind of blew me off, you know, after all of this, you know.
It was this really interesting thing, and it just shows that I was truly in a kind of in a spiritual a vacuum in a way. I really was completely unattached to what he decided to do. I was completely free of it. So he asked me, you know, he's like, babe, I want to do that cleanse. You know, could you get? And I said, in the moment, I said, yes, I will get this for you. And then my body didn't move. And what I mean to say is the entire concept left my consciousness and I didn't even think about it again until he mentioned it a second time. Mm. And then he said, are you getting me the herbs? I said, yes. But then the same thing happened. It left my consciousness. And then he asked me again. And I mean, by like the fifth time, he was so pissed at me, where usually I would have run out and I would have had him all ready and everything. So I was laughing at myself
that it kept leaving me. So I got the herbs, and then, you know, neither one of us had thought that he was going to have to stop drinking coffee, and he was drinking like venti Starbucks with 3 ad shots like twice a day.
And you don't drink coffee anymore?
Rarely.
Once in a while.
Once in a while, not too much. So, anyway, so the first day that he was detoxing, he was just curled up in a ball sweating like he was coming off heroin. It was so extreme. And even then, I had no attachment. I wasn't like, oh, is he going to do this a day or a week? I was just like, wow, look at him. Kind of in the moment. So, but the thing that I want to say, though, here, and this is, again, like linking to the meditation. Okay, so later what transpired is Rich became plant-based. Then he went vegan. His story got picked up by CNN. He started doing these Ultraman races, which are double Ironman races. And he started doing and living the life that he wanted, that his heart wanted for him as a child. This is Rich as a child. He loves athletics. He was a fan of all kinds of athletes. And this is really what he wanted to be doing. And becoming an Ultraman or going back to athletics at that stage of his life was nowhere on his vision board, his collage, or his bucket list, or his journal. And what I want to say is that when we connect with this divine mind through meditation, our minds are only capable of so much imagining for ourselves. We can't see the picture from where we sit. And when you can let go and you can really lay in the arms of this force, for me, she's Divine Mother, but it could be anything, the force, the consciousness, whatever that is. When you really can release and give yourself over to it, it will paint your life mandala far beyond anything your human could ever have imagined. And that's the deep beauty of our experience.
The one thing I want to say, and correct me, you guys, if I'm wrong, but in the same way that I think for a woman, the most amazing thing a man can do is say, I don't know, tell me, you talk to me, is like really seductive. I think for a man to tell them, I really like what you're doing, I appreciate you and I support you, no matter what you want to do, I'm here for you, and never tell them they're doing anything wrong, because it seems to me men are very fragile in that sense. So if they're told you're doing it wrong, they're going to shut off immediately. Am I wrong or am I striking a chord? Like, is
well, are you saying I do that wrong?
I'm saying
just kidding. That was a joke. You know, but it does remind me, though, that of our book, The Power of No. She basically, in her own way, didn't say no, but made him ask again several times. So she was supportive, but you were sort of not quite saying yes, but kind of not quite saying no either. But that is the power of no, where you say it a couple of times, and then it sort of throws it back at them. Do I really want this? And then they push for it. Mm-hmm. Then it's okay. Mm-hmm.
But you know, and I never spoke about this, and it's a secret, but I had an experience similar to Julie, not with a spiritual master, but with a therapist, because James and I, when we have issues with the children, and we really have no idea what to do, which is sometimes, we visit a very wise therapist, anyways. And this guy, first of all, he pointed out I wasn't listening to what he was saying. He says to me, do you hear what he said? And I'm like, yeah. And he says, what did he say? And I couldn't believe that after listing what I said, I actually had not heard him. And then he said, you're telling him everything he's doing is wrong. And I'm like, oh, my God. Mm-hmm. I've been telling him everything I've been saying has been pointing out, look at how this is not going well. Look at that. That is not good. And that therapist turned me around, and I stopped doing that. So now I even wrote a post, should I die for the next wife of James? You should know, always tell him he's doing the right thing.
Well, I think to your point, you know, one thing that Julie demonstrated during this kind of transition period and everything that followed was a tremendous level of faith in my journey and being an incredible, like, unflappable support system for me, because I was going way out on a limb and I was doing crazy stuff that nobody in their right mind at age 42 and 43 would really logically entertain. Like, it didn't make sense, right, in the kind of narrative structure of how we're supposed to be living our lives. You know, like I'm a lawyer and I have kids and here's what I do and this is how I define myself. And I was questioning those and I was trying different things. And these things were not related to earning a living necessarily. In fact, they were quite often at odds with that. And it would have been very normal or expected for Julie to say, look, you got to quit this nonsense. Like, what are you doing? Like, we got kids and you got to stop messing about. And like, where's the bottom line? And let's sit down and we got to, you know, you need to like correct your ship right now. But she didn't do that. She was very cognizant that I was grappling with some things that were important to me that perhaps she might not have understood necessarily, but she intuitively knew were things that I needed to work through for myself. And so she was always like, you need to go do this. Like, and I would have moments of doubt where my own faith would be questioned. And I was like, why am I doing this? I shouldn't be doing that. I need to go back to, you know, living that narrative, you know, that everyone else is doing. And she was like, no, you need to go out and do this. Don't worry. We'll, you know, we'll solve all these other problems. These are just things or whatever. But like, you need to continue to walk this path. And I think having that support system is kind of speaking to what you were, the issue that you were raising of like having her have that confidence in me is what allowed it all to kind of blossom.
You know, let me ask you this, because, you know, Julie was mentioning how you went back to what you loved as a child. It's almost like you brought your childhood dreams to life. And I find that the same thing has happened to me and to us. And whenever I veer from that, I'm shut down, like really hard, really fast. Like if I, for instance, say, you know, I could make 50 times the money if I just do the Silicon Valley thing again or whatever, that would be the right thing to do. But if I even like start to go in that direction, I'm like shut down super fast, as opposed to just doing what I'm doing, which continues to grow and grow and grow. So yeah, I wonder if you had that. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry, but it's true. There are choose yourself meetups now all over the world. And that's because when you focus on what you love, and I have to remind you, because sometimes you even tell me, why am I not going to Silicon Valley? And I'm like, because you're doing what you love.
Yeah, it's true. And so I'm just wondering if the same, if you guys noticed the same thing.
Well, I mean, yeah. I would say the one key thing, and I think, you know, people that don't know us, they assume that, you know, that we live this life of luxury and that's how this came about. But in fact, we were on the verge of being completely annihilated, like financially, and we call it a dismantling. And this was a very long period. It was a 7-year period with a year on each end. So it was 9 years of transformation that has brought us to this point. But what I would say is something that I experienced viscerally that I couldn't really explain to anybody. And if anybody's listening and they're going through this, they're going to know exactly what I'm talking about. Because if you're being dismantled, you know what it feels like. It is like the energy is completely shut off to you in those older ways. So you could send out 1,000 resumes to Silicon Valley and you would never connect. It would never. Or if you did manage to connect, you would be in a lawsuit or something very, very problematic.
By the way, yes and yes.
Yes and yes. Yeah. Did I tell you I'm psychic also? That's also a byproduct of meditation.
I didn't say not resumes, but the lawsuit is.
Yeah. So the thing is, and I got that message, you know, early on when this whole thing began, it was actually coincided with the birth of our fourth daughter, Jaya. But I was doing interior design and I was working, you know, I was doing, you know, boffy kitchens and buildings and I was, you know, all in it. And I had a certain client and I literally got the message in meditation. It was a foreboding warning. You must stop now. Wow. Immediately. And if you do not, you will pay deep karmic consequences. It was like, it felt like death to me. Rich had to wrap that job up for me. I was unable to interact with that energy anymore in a business sense. And the message to me was, you can no longer work for money.
You know, the same thing has happened with us, which is that I would say in the past 3 years, all of my traditional business relationships have ended, like 100% of them. Mm-hmm. So now it's just kind of the writing and the things that have been coming out of that, like podcasting and other things, these meetups that Claudia referred to. And then all of our stuff has kind of worked together. But all of my business relationships, I had to stop. I couldn't and you were pointing it out more than I was pointing out, you would say you have to stay away from that guy because it was just bad for me. And I would think, no, they need me or they're going to go bankrupt or whatever. Like, I was filling myself with this like nonsense. And
yeah, that's another thing. When your woman
are you
says,
tell me I'm wrong?
When your woman says, stay away from that guy, you may want to trust it. We have an instinct. I don't know what it is, but in every case, I can feel energies. You know, we women are different. What can you do? You're totally mental, and you're going to go into that side of the brain, and you're going to analyze it. And we go from the gut immediately because I didn't, thank God, because I'm afraid of it. But we bear children, so we have a tremendous connection to the body biologically. So we feel it in the gut immediately, especially if we're balanced. You know, I'm not saying every man or every woman, obviously. Mm-hmm.
That's so interesting. Yeah, I think guys need to get hit over the head with it a few times before we get it, at least in my experience. But yeah. But I think that's so interesting, you know, because I see you, and I'm, you know, like Julie was talking about projecting on other people. Like, so if I was projecting my sense of who you are onto you, it's like somebody who has talents in many arenas, and I see all the writing and the blogs and all crazy numbers of podcasts that you're doing, and also like, you know, being involved in all these different businesses. And I'm like, how does he even like how does that work? Like on a day-to-day basis, like how do you have the time to do that? Like I'm trying to just grapple with it. And it's so interesting to hear you talk about how you know, you're pulling your energy back and focusing on the one thing. I mean, it's like for me, I see your writing as being really the tip of the spear of what you're doing. I mean, you have such a touch and such a gift and a unique voice with that, that, you know, I'm glad to hear that that's where your energy is getting focused now, because anybody can go and work at a Silicon Valley, whatever, you know, be a venture capitalist. There's plenty of people that could do that, but your voice is your voice and nobody else has that.
No, thanks. I appreciate that. And the thing is, what turned out was the less involved I was in business activities, the better those businesses would do anyway. So I'm just good doing what I do, like what I wanted to do as a child. So when I was in fifth grade, I would bring my notebook and I would write like either stories or this girl likes this guy and this guy likes this girl, and like everybody wanted to get into my notebook to know like what I was thinking about, who was going after who. And so that's now I'm able
and
to actually
the teacher,
do that.
The teacher had to remove the book from you.
Right, I wasn't allowed to.
It was such a bestseller that it had to be confiscated from
yes.
the school.
It was a banned, but your first book was banned.
I was censored by the First Amendment.
So I think the spiritual field of where we've entered is when you are doing what you love and you're in alignment with your heart, then the manifestation of energy is abundant and it's coming in many different ways. However, I think that as spiritual beings, we are having our needs met in the moment. You know, so I think that there's not as much focus as like saving nuts up for, you know, some future timeline. Like I always say, like, so does Buddha have a savings account, or, you know, Jesus have a 401k just in case? Or, you know, it's like you know, you're living in tune with consciousness at such a level. So it's not that we won't be playing with, we'll be playing with expansive amounts of energy, and some of those energy forms will be in the form of monies. And the beautiful thing is, having been so beautifully alchemized or beat up by life, you know, and sort of washed around and tumbled a lot, we're in a very clean place, a very clear place. So when we do play with that kind of energy, we have the ability to share it with others and change other people's lives. And I don't mean by taking up like a big charity perspective, because, you know, some forms of charity are the same energy as like an actress. It's just another ego trip. I'm talking about just being really vulnerable, open, and in service, really. But I told the crowd last night, we had a book release party at Powerhouse Arena in Brooklyn. And, you know, the last thing I said is, I said, you know, the reason that we wrote The Plant Power Way and the reason that we're plant-based advocates is that it's the first step to start to release the density that allows you to feel yourself. And we believe and we know that we're all divine emanations of God, the force, the consciousness. And so we need everybody to be who they are, their individual blueprint. And, you know, that's really what we've tapped into, what you guys have tapped into, what we've tapped into. Definitely not an easy journey and not for the weary.
Well, but and there is a lot of scientific evidence that, you know, when you explore these things, whether it's through writing or meditation or therapy or these groups or whatever, that you do have a greater sense of well-being, like, you know, feelings of freedom, feelings of competence, feelings of better relationships, these naturally start to happen, as opposed to me having to spend an hour talking to some entrepreneur who's not doing the right things and trying to convince them and whatever. No one's happy at the end of that, and that's an hour of life wasted. So it's very important for that moment. The moments add up. So it's important for each moment to be as good as possible.
So where are you taking this ship? Like, what's next? Like, what's on the horizon? Like, you just continue doing what you're doing and writing books and blogging and podcasting, or what's on the collage, the vision board?
Well, I think we don't know. Like, we know that today, like, for instance, doing this podcast is like the right thing to do.
And
I wrote, I did a Q&A earlier. I wrote a post earlier. She did stuff earlier.
She ran for CEO of Twitter earlier.
This is happening, Claudia.
So yeah. We don't know at all.
I mean, life's
going
to change when you become CEO of Twitter. Like, you might have to move.
We're going to move to Silicon Valley anyway because of her. Yeah. But there's one thing we've known is that ever since we've started living this lifestyle, every 6 months has been completely unpredictable. Like, we can't predict it all, like, 2-3 months
like,
in the future.
I'll tell you, I'm a yogi, and so I used to be proud of saying, and I had a lot of ego into this, I'm a vegetarian, which means I'm so much better than anyone else, right? I had that thing going for me for a while, and then I got somehow Lyme disease or something like that. They gave me a lot of antibiotics, and to get out of that, I needed to visit a Chinese medicine practitioner who actually got me out of the antibiotics, and he told me that I needed to eat meat. So I started to eat meat again, much against my shamed yoga ego self, right? And it's been a couple of years now, and I've recovered very well. And at the right time, i.e. 5 weeks ago or 6 weeks ago, I come across James telling me I'm interviewing Rich. I'm thinking, my God, yoga podcast, Julie. And then, you know, I get Julie. We get the preview of the book. We have it in black and white and in color, which is amazing. And I have been thinking that the vegetarianism, you don't choose with the mind to be a vegetarian or a plant-based person. It kind of happens, you know, because the body cannot adapt right away. And through that, you guys are changing me. Like, ever since I started eating like this, now I go to the bathroom very easy, and I seem to be okay without no meat so far. So I don't have any more ego about it, because it can change any minute. I don't know. But for now, it's fine.
It's good.
Yeah.
But and what about you guys in terms of, like, you just published this book. You're thinking of doing a podcast. You're continuing to do the Ultra Iron Superman, you know, all the marathons. Where does this take you?
Yeah, it's a similar answer, I think. It's shifting and it's changing, and you know, I don't know what we're going to be. We're very much in the moment. Like, I do know one thing, which is that I love doing the podcast, and that's really been an incredible, like, not just tool, but like benefit. Like, it's enriched our lives in so many ways.
Totally.
It's just amazing, you know? And so I know that I will continue to do that, because it's just, when do you get an opportunity? Like, we're sitting down, we're having this amazing conversation, you know, it's like, this doesn't happen in normal life, right? It's like, it's such a cool thing. And then to be able to share that with other people, it's just incredible. So,
and people get a lot of value out of
yeah.
it. Like, they, you know, there's listeners. So, I mean, it was interesting for me to switch from, okay, I'm going to talk for an hour with this entrepreneur that I don't really want to talk to, and that's going to be my day, as opposed to me calling up whoever I want in the world. Like,
it's the greatest scam in the world.
Yeah. I could call anybody.
Yes.
Like, I've talked to Rich Roll. I've talked to, you
Johnny
know,
Robbins, Mark Cuban,
yeah, everybody.
Wayne Dyer, wow. Julie Piat.
Yeah. So it's really a great thing. Like, I highly recommend it for everybody.
Yeah, it's amazing. And so I know that, like, I want to continue to grow that and invest in that. And, you know, I'm trying to get it to, like, I've like played around with getting to 2 episodes a week, and it's like, it's a lot of work.
That's
you know?
Hard.
It's like a lot of work. So, I'm trying to get systems. Yeah, I'm like, you're doing five ask alters. How do you do this?
Those are a little easier because most of that is just she and
I
talking.
He basically says, come over, and I jump, and yeah. I'm ready, and we do them.
And you just boom. Yeah.
But doing the interview shows where you have to do all the preparation, for a while I was doing three a week, and that was just too much because I make sure I read every book of the person. Mm-hmm. I make sure I see all the other interviews so I don't ask like the same things they've been mm-hmm. asked a million times, or at least I ask them in a different way. So it was really hard. So now I've scaled that back to one a week because what Julie and I were talking about right before the podcast started is that there really is not a good business model for podcasting.
No.
It really is a childhood fantasy.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you shouldn't do it if you're trying to make money. Like, it's not about that. You know, it's like it's crazy in terms of like a business model, but it's benefited our lives. It's an intangible, you know what
yeah,
I mean? It's
just exactly.
a beautiful thing. So yeah, I encourage anybody who wants to do it, but understand like it is a lot, you know, it's a lot
of
work.
But I actually think it is a very powerful business model. It's just a new business model. It's the new frontier really, because I mean, we know from the book signing last night, I mean, how many people listen to the podcast. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that's so beautiful about it is that they all feel like they're our close, intimate friends, which is how do you connect with somebody like that?
So your message becomes abundant. And that could translate to other types of abundance.
Exactly. And I mean, that's everybody who came out and pre-ordered the book for us and everybody who showed up for us. And also, like, you know, I'm out in the country in Ireland, and I get emailed from, you know, podcast fan in Cork, and they come and pick us up and take us out to their farm and make us a plant-based breakfast. And, you know, it's crazy, like how it reaches so far. So you don't know who you're affecting. And so I would say that it's a spiritual, you know, mecca model, business model, because of the activation that, you know, that's going on. And
particularly because you have a message, and I feel we have not necessarily a message, but this is how we live our lives. People come up to me and said, Oh, I love your podcast. They don't even know I have a blog, which is really where like my home is all my posts and writing. But a lot of people just know me from the podcast, which is really pleasurable. I never would have met that audience.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing. The podcast definitely will continue. And then beyond that, like writing books and, you know, traveling around, public speaking, retreats eventually. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. Like, it's not like we have this scripted business plan. I mean, in terms of like the crazy races and all of that, like that's become less important. You know what I mean? It's like, how fast can I ride my bike? You know, it's like, is that really, how is that helping people? You know what I mean? So the motivation has shifted into how can I be more of service to other people, and how can I carry this healthy message and help people transform their lives? Mm-hmm. And I think where, you know, your message and our message overlap is in trying to help people kind of access their personal power to live more authentically, you know, to who they are. Like the whole choose yourself thing is like so incredibly powerful, you know, like after reading your book, and then when we were working on our cookbook, like we were going to self-publish our cookbook. And I almost felt like I betrayed you when the last minute we decided to go with a publisher, because there's, you know, like it is such a powerful thing.
That's a difficult book,
you know what I mean?
So many photos.
You can't self-publish your book because your book is packaged.
Yeah.
Right. Well, right. I mean, we had created that all in-house,
as
you see it. Like, so, you know, we had like a model kind of set up to do it that way. And we could talk more about that later, but the idea of sort of taking more control over your lives and being more mindful about those decisions and opening up people's eyes that, you know, we don't have to live, you know, it's like we're the first generation that's kind of breaking out of this, you know, kind of madman idea of like what a career is and should be. And as you see the millennials, the way that they're kind of perceiving the world and what a career, you know, could and should be is completely different from our generation. And it's kind of exciting to be kind of, you know, part on the cusp of those two worlds.
Right. And I actually do know a couple things that I'm working on my book, my first book. So I wrote 500 pages last year, which is obviously two books. But I am now working on a proposal. It's for my memoir. So it's sort of like my
my story of the story. So I'm very excited. And it, you know, of course it will be all about the spiritual journey and the spiritual lens, you know, that was, you know, such a, it, really the core part of this whole thing. I always say we're spiritual beings in a human experience, not the reverse. And then the other thing that's exciting for me is, I am working on the next cookbooks already. So I have a kitchen lab. And so once a week I'm working with my sous chef and we're working on gluten-free baked stuff. And then also aged cheeses and these kind of things. So I am that's continuing. So there's some momentum going there. People see that on Instagram. And then the kind of really sweet thing is that I started playing sitar about 4 months ago. And I know that I'm going to be channeling something unique via that, you know, that medium. And I've also started to do some voice development in sort of another way. Like I'm singing extremely high, which is something that I've never done before. So I keep all those creative channels going. So those are things that I do every day, but I don't know what they're going to give me. I'm waiting for them to give me the work in meditation.
The good thing about that is different parts of your brain light up. So whether you're singing or playing the sitar or, you know,
or writing.
Yeah, it's they all interact with each other. So they bring out different creativity. So about a year and a half ago, I had to give a talk that I was very nervous about. And so, and we were talking earlier about 70s TV shows. The way I prepared to give this talk is I sang over and over again, and I'm not a singer at all, the theme songs to Chico and the Man and Welcome Back, Kotter.
That's awesome.
My theme songs of the decade. And I don't know why I picked those two songs, but I would just sing them over and over again and like practice them. And that's how I prepared for this talk, which was like my best talk ever.
That's so cool.
What is the logic behind that? Like, what is the idea that doing that, what gets you in kind of like a childlike state, or how does that alleviate the tension?
It allowed me to not just think about, okay, I have to say this. It allowed my brain to kind of light up in areas that maybe had never lit up before. Like I had never sang anything before. And so that, I don't know what happens, but that then electricity is set all over the brain, and that feeds the area where I had to speak. So when I actually had to speak, and I improv a lot when I speak, it was just part of that. Like now I'm bringing that singing voice in somehow when I'm speaking.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back.
That was a great
song. But that's so cool. You know, it's so cool. And as a sort of multidimensional, you know, creative, you know, being, I've been told my whole life by people, you know, well, why don't you just focus on one thing, or how can you do that? Or what do you mean? Like, and I've told, you know, my good friends that have stuck with me through the years that if I'm not completely unrecognizable every 7 years, then I'm not living. So my life is really about pushing the envelope. That's sort of, you know, what keeps me alive. So for me, it's just the same energy. Creative energy is spiritual energy, is sexual energy. It's all the same. It's all spiritual energy. So I can channel that in whatever way. I never thought or believed that I had to have a training or a technique to do something. So, you know, I've painted, I've written scripts, I write songs, I sing, I cook. Like, it's all creative energy. And, you know, it's not perfect or by anybody's standards or it's not anything but mine. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't need to be judged against anything. It's just mine. Mm-hmm. That's all it is. It's no better or worse than anybody else. You know, it's just mine.
Can I make a request? For your book on cooking, which you'll do together. Here's the thing. We haven't found bread that is healthy,
yes,
James and me, and we crave it and we need it and we miss it. Please.
Yes, that's definitely what I'm working on right now. So
thank you.
So yeah, so there's this whole thing, you know, how are we on time? Do you have to go?
Do we have, no.
Okay, good.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I just want to check. So, okay, so the boys and I have been studying with this amazing realized being named Vidyadishananda. His title is actually His Holiness Vidyadishananda. So he's from a very, very monastic, pure order of monks in the high Himalayas. And he has over 50,000 hours of meditation experience in the high caves with just a cloth in sub-freezing temperatures. They actually drop their heartbeats and they go out of their bodies and merge with the cosmos. And then they come back in and they compare notes. So the monks, you know, there's like sort of a class and they all write, you know, well, this is what I saw and this is what I experienced. And that's how the senior monks know if they pass the test, like mm-hmm. if they really got there. So anyway, we have the big blessing that he happens to be living in Santa Barbara. Mm-hmm. So we go up and meditate with him, and I've done some retreats with him, and Rich and I hosted him at our home. He is a medical expert, you know, master, as well as a musical master. He sees a tremendous problem with the wheat and gluten issues. So what he was teaching us is that we need to make breads with the ancient grains like millet. I'm in an exploration with that. Also there's a lot of fermentation, like breads that can be fermented. So that is really my biggest, inspiration after the book, because, you know, baking bread is completely different, and also baking cakes. Mm-hmm. So, I was able to achieve a very great chocolate cake that was part of the pre-order bonus recipes. It's a cherry cacao cake. It's actually on the cover of my album, Jai Home. Mm-hmm. It was my cake art as well. But, I'm going to be developing all of that, because that's the same thing in my family. You know, we're eating out of my book, and it's great, and the bread is not cutting it. And when you buy gluten-free, most of the time it's not healthy.
And it's disgusting. I'm sorry.
It doesn't taste good. So we're working on that, and, you know, and it is a whole science and a thing. So fingers crossed, I hope I succeed.
No more Wonder Bread for you, James.
Oh, yeah.
Julie's coming up with it now. It's not a plan. Thank God.
I know James wanted to – we forgot to open it that way, but before we started recording, James said, is Wonder Bread a plant? I don't know.
It is vegetarian.
It exists in three dimensions.
I was going to say, actually, that Wonder Bread does have one beautiful energetic aspect with it, and that's the name and the resonance of the name. So I guess with an applied
wonder
intention, no, a wonder, wonder bread. Yeah, you could
like
wonder
Wonder
if
Woman
it's bread.
Too.
Yeah, like a superpower bread. Yeah. But again, like I always say, you know, you can transform anything with the intention that you put on it. So, you know.
Well, thank you, Julie.
I have a question about what you said earlier, how every 7 years, if you're not unrecognizable again, that you're doing the wrong thing. And I wanted to ask, like, both of you guys are recognizable by what you're doing now. Like, you with the ultra marathons, do you feel like super identified with that, so that if you were no longer identified with that, it would feel funny to you? Like you pointed out with me with my writing, how you identify with this particular voice that I use in the writing. I do wonder, you know, you ultimately, everybody changes voice. Mm-hmm. And so every 7 years or every 3 years or 5 years, or like Louis C.K., the comedian, changes his act every year. So when do you think, and I've had this conversation even with Ice-T. So before we started our podcast, I said to him, if you appeared nowhere for X amount of time, how much time would it take before nobody talks about you? Right. And he said right away, 6 months. So uh-huh. It's obviously like everybody thinks about this. So what's your thoughts on this?
The idea that you're no longer going to be relevant. Well, I first of all, that's a great question. And I don't know if anybody's ever asked me that. So, you know, thanks for that. I think that it's really important to not be dogmatic about these things. And I think, yeah, it's like, oh, Rich Roll. Oh, he's the vegan. He's the, you know, ultra distance triathlete guy. And so these are the monikers, you know, that I kind of shoulder, and I'm comfortable with that and I'm cool with that. But, you know, what happens if something changes and, you know, I decide that I want to eat differently, or I don't want to be an athlete anymore? Like, do I have to continue to, you know, be the guy who, you know, everybody expects me to be? And I think it's important to always be challenging yourself and to not allow yourself to be, you know, limited by those definitions. But it's difficult too. And I think especially as, you know, the audience grows and there's more, you know, people know who you are and there's an expectation.
Yeah,
there's an expectation that comes with that. And so, you know, we've been traveling a lot, doing a lot of appearances, and every time somebody says, what are you training for? What's your next race? And the truth is, I'm not training for a race right now. And there are things I'd still like to do athletically, but life is really busy right now. Life is very much in session in a different kind of way. And that way is sort of connecting with people and being of service to them and being kind of a missionary of this idea and this message that we're promulgating. And in so doing, there's just not time to go out on an 8-hour bike ride, nor am I certain that that's appropriate anymore. You know, maybe I won't compete anymore. Maybe I will. That door is open, but I don't want to be defined by that idea. Like, I'm almost 50 anyway, so it's like, you know, how am I going to be doing this forever? You know what I mean? Like, I want to be able to find a way to continue the work that we're doing, but do it in a way that's sustainable and provides for my family and is, you know, I don't know. I mean, so yeah, it's always being challenging those labels, I think, is important if you want to continue to expand. I mean, it'd be easy to stay that guy. Like, oh, I can just be the plant. I could just continue to write books about plant-based nutrition and being an athlete. But, like, I don't think that that's really I think that there is more that can be said in different ways. You know, mm-hmm. I'm interested in the growth.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that really – I mean, how relevant are any of us in terms of the cosmos? Yeah. Like, not relevant at all.
And I agree theoretically.
Right.
And you try to live that life.
Right.
But then it's hard. Like, something inside, like,
it's fighting. Your ego is like,
that.
No. Well, yeah. I mean, maybe. So for me, it's like that's just another. I'm very viscerally aware of how short or fragile this life is and what a blessing it is to be here. And that's one of the reasons why I was able to support Rich in this crazy, seemingly crazy, you know, out on a limb thing that, you know, caused our family a lot of financial hardship and a lot of, you know, it was a hard journey. It wasn't an easy journey. But for me, the whole purpose of life is spiritual transformation. And so you can't do that if you're hanging on to a bank account or like a security job. So for me, I would say that it's the transformation that's relevant. And so I can't say to what degrees that would be happening, but the evolution has to be going. And so like I can speak musically, like I know my next musical project is going to be something twisted different. Like I know she's coming in, but I don't know exactly what she looks like yet, but I'm preparing with the structure to receive her. So I know that's coming. So I would say that I don't really identify with it. I don't like labels around me anyway. And I've always said that if I woke up tomorrow and if my body told me it needed a piece of meat, I would go find a sacred wild hunted. I'd do a ceremony and I'd eat it as medicine if I needed that. That hasn't happened. I don't expect that to happen. But I don't like to have labels and boxes around me because that's not a yogic way to live. It's not spontaneous or free.
But let me ask you, so now, like you were mentioning in Ireland, a fan wrote you and you had your book opening, you know, party, mm-hmm. book release party last night. So now you're getting this other taste of there's people out there that I've been connecting with that. And there's a certain magic to that, of course. Mm-hmm. And it feels very special and it's addictive as well. And so what would happen if, let's say, 5 years from now, you had none of that? Would you feel, do you think, yeah, obviously you can't predict, but do you think that would feel bad?
No, I mean, I don't. And I mean, I can say for myself, I don't personally identify with it. It's sweet and I enjoy the connection and I'm grateful. And I, as a human being, I enjoy connecting with other people. But I never for one minute believe that it's me or that it has anything to do with this personality. It's simply a reflection of the one force. So it's like my music that I received it in meditation. I wasn't trying to write a song. It just wrote me. So that's why I sing under the name Srimati because it's my spiritual name. And because I feel like it was given to me from another energy. They don't belong to me. Like if somebody said to me, I hate your music, it means nothing to me. because I'm like, yeah, go tell God about it. Like, tell God. Like, I almost feel like a kind of a bystander in a lot of ways. And I think that, you know, it's a trap to get in the illusion of thinking that, you know, that it's personality based, because it's not. We only exist here. We only experience this journey the way that it's been laid out by the grace of God. That's seriously, like not that long ago, Rich and I we broke down crying in Starbucks. Like, we were actually sobbing, our family, on the precipice of complete annihilation, of losing everything, of realizing that every single decision we had made together as a couple had been wrong. And we were just there on the razor's edge. It could have gone either way. And it went this way. And we're grateful. We are so grateful. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that alchemical journey, that 9 years of being battered by the storm, it provides a maturity and an awareness. And so for that, no one can take that from us, no matter what happens with this illusion, with this, if this explodes or we're not doing this, or even if we're not together, or even, you know, whatever's happening, no one can take that awareness, because it became a part of us.
That's amazing. I wanted to ask you a question, because I wonder, and I'm not exactly sure how it's going to tie it up, so I'm just going with the flow of life here. So bear with me. But you know how there is a voice in the head that keeps telling me, you're not good enough, you're stupid, that's silly, that's how it goes for me? Have any of you been able to quiet that voice for a period longer than 5 seconds?
That voice... I'm so familiar with that voice. I'm very intimately connected to that voice, and that voice has been with me my whole life. You know, like self-defeatism and poor self-esteem and you know, the idea that nothing is ever going to work out and I don't deserve to have good things. I mean, that is my bedfellow, you know. And so for me, and I think it's, you know, it fuels my alcoholism. It's all very complicated and you know, and tricky, but I only get respite from that in moments. You know, for me, it's like it takes relentless, constant work to always be trying to arrest that sense, because that is my default setting, you know, from as far back as I can remember. Julie doesn't really share that. She can speak to her own personal experience with that, and she helps me kind of navigate that. But really through meditation and through like the active meditation of the running and the swimming and the things that I do, I find relief, you know. It's and that relief is hard wrought, you know, and it's fleeting. So I don't know that I'll ever overcome it, you know, but it's almost like something that I'm living with all the time, but I'm always trying to consciously overcome that.
I don't have that voice. I have just space. That's not to say that I can't have a busy mind. Like, I have 4 kids, and if I have like stuff that has to happen, you know, I might have those thoughts, but I don't have voices that attack me in a negative way. I don't have a negative voice.
Did you ever have it? Had it?
No, I don't think I ever had it. I don't think
it's
I ever
sort
had
of like
it.
Like, you're like a Martian.
No, because she grew up, you know, in the forest of Alaska, yeah. And her parents were crazy that she would roam free for 24 hours, like where she could freeze. Well, yeah. And so you were so connected to nature so early on, and I wonder whether...
Yeah, well, it was Colorado first. I mean, I had a very aware consciousness of being the age I am now when I was born. I've always felt the way I feel right now, like there's no difference. And I was waiting around a lot when I was a kid for my childhood to be over so that I could go do what I needed to do. So, you know, it was... Yeah, I've never been attacked by negativity like that. That's not to say that I don't have a pain body that sometimes get activated, or I get threatened, or I get afraid, or something like that. I do, but there is a consciousness that's beyond it. And, you know, I also had this thing that I'm very compassionate with myself, and I'm very compassionate with other people. So I don't have a lot of judgments about people or what they're doing or about myself. And I think that's something, maybe just the way I was created, why I was always able to try something. Just go, oh, I can paint, but I have no training in painting, but here, watch me. And then I just figure it out.
somehow. So I never had that set for myself, and I never really had that set for someone else.
So what would you recommend for someone that does have that voice going on?
Meditation and yoga. And I think what cultivated a lot for me too is a lot of time on the mat, a lot of time in yoga. You know, when you get that second attention, or even being in spiritual practice, when I'm looking at you, but I have another attention on a divine energy at the same time. Mm. So it's holding that double awareness. And then you can say, it's sort of like also the little child. This is super, super helpful, okay, because we are spiritual beings having a human experience. So the ego, or the person, is just like a little child, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. So you can care for your little child, and you can understand that that's not you. You can say, oh, I'm feeling jealous. Well, that's just the little child that's feeling jealous. That's not you. So you can connect with that greater self and actually comfort yourself and take care of yourself the way you would somebody else. So I think it's the disconnection from ourselves, you know, that can be problematic.
I think another thing that's helped me a lot is understanding that kind of mentality is also a very selfish mentality, right? Because it's very self-obsessed, like, oh, it's all about me and like what's going to happen to me. And, you know, one of the things that I learned very early on in sobriety was that self-esteem comes from performing esteemable acts, right? And so a way of combating that kind of default setting or overcoming it is to get out of yourself and your problems and just invest yourself in somebody else. Like, call somebody else up who's having a harder time than you. There's nothing that will cure yourself of getting out of your own head and your own like petty, whatever it is, looping, you know, thought patterns, than just by getting involved in somebody else and helping them through a difficult time.
Well, it's interesting because that's almost a contradiction in how people normally think. You normally think if you're very positive, then you suddenly become qualified to encourage others. But actually, the people who are most discouraged should be the ones encouraging others, because that's how you really make the most transformation, probably on both sides.
Of course. Well, just by virtue of being a human being, you have experiences that have value to other people. Right.
Yeah, I think they happen. Things happen to people who will be able to share them. That's why they happen to you. Like, I have certain things that have happened to me that are pretty horrible, but those things made me the woman I am today in mm-hmm. a way. So I agree with that completely.
It's funny because the past, let's say, 5 or 6 years since we've really gone kind of full force down this type of path, it's almost like I welcome bad things to happen, because then it's like, then it's like,
I don't know about that.
Because that, but
he's calling Grace.
But then it's like, this gives me a chance to actually see if this stuff that I've been doing is working.
I think life.
It'll give you enough.
Yes.
Don't ask for more, Grace. We'll just call Grace into this.
Yes, thank you. Yes.
Well, the worst case scenario is it gives you something awesome to write about.
Yeah, that's always that. I always know yeah. I'm going to have content.
Yeah.
Like we had something bad happen this morning, actually. Somebody took my latest book and completely duplicated it and published it under their name. Yeah. And so it was just then, you know, and then we didn't know all sorts of things. Started to think, well, what else is he doing or what's he up to?
Like on Amazon and everything?
On Amazon.
The
yeah.
The voice went crazy. We have to do something.
But then again, it gives an opportunity to sort
practice.
Of work through.
Something like that just happened to Rich, too.
Yeah. No, I just found out somebody published a book. It's a Kindle on Amazon about running, and the on the cover is a picture of me running.
Oh,
like, I've never heard of this person. I have no, and I'm like, I don't know anything about it or whatever. And he just stole a photograph of me and put it on the cover of his book.
But actually, that's a sign. It's a sign. You know what it is? It's that's a distraction from like energies that want to distract you. You know
right.
what I mean?
Well, and again, that gives us the chance to see
exactly
is this practice. Did we? You know, we call meditations often called a practice. Well, practice for what? Mm-hmm. Practice for this moment.
Right.
This is one of those moments that it's a practice for. So did it work? Was my practice
good?
It didn't for me.
It delayed my yoga practice by like 2 hours. it was like I was calling the thing.
Well, I saw it first at like, you know, I was kind of not feeling so well. And I looked at 3 in the morning at my books, and I saw, why are there two Choose Yourself Guide to Wealth out there? And then I saw this, but then I went back to sleep, like I didn't think about it. And then when we were dealing with Amazon, you were like, we've got to call like Jeff Bezos right now. And I'm like, let's just play
See,
this
that's
out.
That's the voice. That's
so
the voice.
Somebody literally just cribbed the entire thing, same cover, same title, and said it was by you? Or
yeah.
Someone,
no, actually, he said it was by account? Me, all in caps, with him as the editor, and then he stole all my reviews. And so there were two versions of my book.
I tried putting a one-star review, and it went into the real book, too.
That's an amazing scam. So whoever's doing that is out there doing it to probably a lot of people. Like,
oh,
this
we
is
saw
just
he
a
is.
Way of people unknowingly just, you know, accidentally buying the wrong book, and these people just profiting off of it.
So I would call customer service, and I would say, listen, I'm going to give you a chance to be a real hero at Amazon right now, because someone has, like, hacked 1,000 books at Amazon. And she was like, I'm sorry, sir, I can't help you. And but finally, because fortunately we know people at Amazon, we were able to get things accomplished.
And
but
I think he's down now?
Yeah. And so that's what I figured would happen. So
that's interesting. I mean, I think that it's a great – you know, this is how Julie and I are different, right? So like when I found out that there's this book out there and I'm on the cover and it's talking about the paleo diet and all these things that like are not who I am – I went insane, right? And I show it to Julie, you know, sort of expecting her to have an equal, you know, sort of response to this. And she's like, oh, that's interesting. You know, like, so what do we, you know, like it just doesn't, it, you know, she's like not investing herself emotionally in this at all, which I think is probably the more apropos reaction to this because I'm spinning my wheels and going crazy. And the truth is it's a quality problem. In certain respects, it's like, it's, you know, it's a compliment and it's really just not a big deal.
Yeah, my reaction was probably somewhere in the middle because I saw he was getting sales. Like his Kindle rank was like competing with my real Kindle
that's
rank.
That's not good.
So I had to wonder like how much money is he, you know, kind of putting his hand in my pocket, which I don't really like so much.
Well, again, I mean, it's not like I would want that to be changed. And I mean, I don't think that that's okay to do. I find it kind of ridiculously funny, you know, funny that humanity works that way. Or the illusion of that mind, and then at the other end, as I also see that energy will try to disrupt you. So whenever I'm in those situations, you can just go to Jedi Warrior. Okay, so if you're really walking the path, you're a Jedi Warrior. So have you ever seen a Jedi Warrior lose their shit on screen?
No.
No, they don't. And I'll tell you where your power is. Your power is in neutral compassion. So you just stay in zero.
Wait, what does that mean, neutral compassion?
It means stay in your core, like actually feel the center, like 3 inches below your heart.
Like take a deep breath?
I think that's what we were able to do.
Yeah, and just
You still take the action.
You still take the action. You just don't get all emotional. Don't spike your insulin.
For instance, we tracked him down like personally because he had – his name was exposed and we had his LinkedIn page. So I just wrote him a note saying, hey, no hard feelings. You just need to take this down. Right. And he never responded, but just we did those types of actions. Sure. Given the resources we had available, as you were talking about earlier, we took the right actions. And that's all we could do. Then I had to write a post and I had to do a podcast and I had to do other things.
What's so hilarious, though, is that it's so easy to find out who this guy is. Like, obviously, he knows he's going to get caught. And, like, what is the mentality that's going on there? He's just counting on you saying, oh, we'll just let bygones. So in the meantime, he pockets a little bit and then just moves on to the next book.
Or
But he should have, if I were him, he should have at least done it in a fake name because he has actually books that he's written that he does make money off of. And I warned him in the note, like, you could put yourself in serious trouble here. Like, you should not do this.
But I love the idea of like him waking up in the morning and a light bulb going off in his head. I'm going to copy Jason.
And he didn't copy any other books. Like, I asked, why didn't he like copy Tim Ferriss's book or something?
And I think it happened to you because you're going to tell this story then, you know, because it's a great story.
It's funny.
You know, all of this, talking to you guys, you not having the voice, he has it.
Funny.
I went crazy.
Yeah, that voice. Well, and that's the scary thing too. Well, that's the kind of tragic thing in a way. And it's like, you know, you get these people that are impulsed and, you know, they do horrible things and it's not even them.
It's another energy that comes in that basically kind of takes over. So you could call it
the dark side.
Yeah, you could call it that.
No, but also he could be scared. He lives in Bangladesh, right? So he could be scared. He could be broke or needed a little extra money really quickly.
That's right.
And so this was a technique.
He was like, I have to do this.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry, James.
You should write him a thank you letter because he gave you something to write about.
Exactly. Right, exactly.
Right.
Well, but we have stuff like this, I would say, every other day. There is some experience that is so over the top. We have
living
to
Living with
write
James
about it.
Is like living with a tornado that's about to erupt. And the eruption happens about once a month. Guaranteed.
Yeah, that's right. Maybe even a little more frequently.
Beautiful. Well, I think we got to wrap it up because I got to go. I got to go. Okay. All right.
Just
go
one
for
thing
it.
That I wanted to mention as a tool also to help with this, with the voice, right? So I think, you know, we all know that if you just look at it logically and look at the cosmos and look at really how meaningful are we, you know, even as a species, you know, everybody's like, we have to save the planet. Well, the planet will be fine. It's a matter of if humanity continues to exist, you know, the way we've been behaving.
Wait, I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yeah,
on
go
that.
Ahead.
So I said that recently.
And someone freak out.
Someone actually wrote a blog post saying I should be institutionalized in a
really?
Mental institution.
Oh, no. Now they're going to say it about me.
I said the human species is one out of 8.7 million.
Yeah.
So who really...
Yeah.
I said I really like humans, but it doesn't really matter if we're on this planet if we exist or
it
not.
No, it doesn't. The planet's going to be fine. I mean,
do a lot better.
That's right.
And definitely.
It's up to us. And I mean, we're trying to do everything we can, you know. But you know, so we'll see how we fare. But what I would say is, and this is a spiritual practice. It's very, very simple, and it's that, you know, before you go to bed, you know, you can offer your entire life to that force. All the good and all the bad. So you don't take any of the credit. You just go, okay, you know, in gratitude, I live this day and I offer you my entire existence today. And now I'm lying down to sleep. And then when you wake up in the morning, you dedicate your whole day to that existence. So when something great happens, it's not yours. And when something tragic happens, it's not yours. But you're simply serving. You're of service.
You know, it's funny. We wrote about that a little bit in The Power of No. I think we call that chapter the anti-law of attraction. Mm-hmm. In that we said, let's assume for a second. We don't know either way. Let's assume for a second there is something similar to the law of attraction. We don't want any of it. Like whatever you were going to give it to us, just give it to wherever you want to give was a chapter in the Power of No.
You
so,
wrote that one. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's very similar to the idea of surrender. Which is like a big thing in sobriety, right? In recovery, like the idea of like letting go and non-attachment, right? Like surrendering the results. Like you do the work, but you surrender your attachment to the result of that, you know? And there's a certain peace that comes with that. And it's actually it feels like defeat. It's difficult to like mentally grapple with what that means because it sounds like you're giving up, but it's actually not. It's actually like a very kind of courageous, powerful thing to do.
Right, because you can always take action. It doesn't stop you from taking action.
Right, but you're not derailed by the results of wherever that action leads.
And you're not giving up. You're giving in to something greater than yourself, you know, than the personality. And, you know, it's beautiful. And I mean, really, if you look at it just logically, like even the most famous person that you've ever heard of in your entire life. So they die and it's on the news for what, like 5 minutes and then it's over. So it's like, what illusion are we creating in our minds, you know, that's why live the life that you want to live, live the life that you were designed to live. And the answer lies in your heart and stay out of fear. Do what you love. And you're going to be good.
I love it.
And thank you guys for joining us.
Oh, thank you.
Podcasters thank in you. Dining rooms, drinking tea, discussing everything.
We're still not sure whose podcast this is, but it will be something.
It'll go on all of
them.
We've got five different podcasts.
I feel like you interviewed us. I still have so many questions for you guys. So
we'll have to do it again.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
In California.
Yes.
Very cool.
Oh, thanks, you guys.
All right. Well, thanks so much for your time.
Yes.
You guys are lovely.
You guys love
really
each other.
It's really delightful.
We love
so.
Each other.
You have
so much love.
We do. Cool. Mutual love affair.
All right. Okay. Until next time, then.
Yes.
Peace.
How do you plant?
Plants.
Namaste. How do you guys sign off?
We just end.
You just end?
We drop the mic.
Yeah. That's it.
Like Jesus.
For more from James, check out the James Altucher Show on the Stansberry Radio Network at stansberryradio.com and get yourself on the free insiders list today.
Imagine earning a degree that prepares you with real skills for the real world. Capella University's programs teach skills relevant to your career so you can apply what you learn right away. Learn how Capella can make a difference in your life at capella.edu.